Welcome to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church. Our goal is to help you apply the hope of the gospel of Jesus Christ to everyday life. Before we get started, I do want to offer a little bit of a content warning. This podcast is about abuse and trauma in the church. We don't talk about anything in graphic detail, but we don't want to cause anyone any distress. That said, listener discretion is advised. Hey, traveling partners. Welcome back to Abound in Hope. This is a second part in a series about spiritual abuse and trauma, or abuse and trauma in the church specifically. And we wanted to once again give a content warning just to make sure the last thing we want to do in creating these podcasts, having these conversations, is to cause more harm. And we're really just trying to make it okay to talk about this stuff at Imprint Church, remove the stigma, bring things into the light. But to that end, I'm Rex Gorman.
I'm Darren Larson.
I'm Tom Regan.
I'm Tom McGregor.
And we are, we have a quorum.
Yes.
That's what we have.
And to Rex's point, push pause and don't listen. If we did this at our practicums as well, we told people, man, you are welcome to head on out if you need to. And
it's
a good thing.
Yeah. Another thing, like if you do choose to listen, we touch a nerve somewhere, like talk to somebody about that. Yeah, that'd be an important thing.
Yeah, let this push you to community.
Yeah,
healthy community.
For real. So last week we spent time talking about some pretty depressing and dark things, talking about some statistics of abuse in general and then how that translates into the church. We talked about broadly what abuse is and then what spiritual abuse is. We talked broadly about what trauma is and then what spiritual trauma is and what can kind of contributes to some of these things. And we didn't get too much into the theory. It was a lot of information last week. Anything that you guys want to recap or talk about again, or if they feel like you want to clean up from last time? Or
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all right. I think people can listen. And yep.
Yeah. So last week was sort of the what. Is this conversation sort of the so what? Is that what we would say? Or
yeah, I think we're going to talk about how does this happen in light of how ubiquitous this is. How can this possibly happen in the household of God? Mm-hmm. And then how can we be preventative? What are some of the mitigating factors and a response, not just generally, but for Imprint and for our community? And so those are kind of the two big categories that we're going to be talking about today.
Gotcha.
In some ways, this is our fight against this happening here. Like, I mean, honestly,
absolutely,
like we are doing these podcasts for the sake of saying this shall not happen here to the best of our ability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And we need to, as a community, believe that and work towards
and work towards it. That's a really good thing to say. So some of the things we're going to say today in this podcast, I think, will actually give you jobs to do as part of our community of Christ here, to be vigilant, to be helpful, to be part of like walking in the light as a church community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So last week the statement was made. You said, often predators or people, abusers, find, a job in ministry or a position of authority in a church to be an attractive thing. And because of that, that's why, the level of abuse inside the church is the same or higher sometimes. Mm-hmm. What are the contributing factors to that? Like, why do you think that's the case? Mm-hmm. What happens to make that a reality?
Yeah. So, and you guys can like chime in here, but I think what you often find is a person who is unhealthy, unsafe, manipulative, or abusive, and they find their way into a position of authority and influence, and then they start to change a culture so that their ability to manipulate and abuse other people is reinforced, strengthened, protected, etc. I don't know if you guys have seen that in systems you've been a part of or been around.
I don't know that I can say that I've seen that firsthand, specifically in the roles that I've been in, but I am familiar enough with people who come to the church who seem very eager for leadership, and I'm very on guard against that. So my experience in the church as a pastor is I have found that the best leaders are the people that are often the most reluctant to get into a leadership position. It's like there's a humility that they don't want to, They don't want that mantle. But yeah. Then we're like, hey, you're really good at this. And yeah. Like, we really think that you'd be a good fit for this.
Well, like, for example, we had Introducing Imprint at Woodinville a few weeks ago. And one of our elders introduced himself. He said, yeah, I'm on the parking team. And also I serve on the elder board. I thought that was so funny because it highlights that like
he's not obsessed with the title.
Yeah, exactly. He wasn't.
Yeah.
He wasn't telling a joke either.
No,
he
wasn't.
Genuinely led with that.
100%.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. That's good.
But that's the kind of person that should probably be in a party.
Yeah. To Tom's point, there seems to be a gregariousness to sometimes, and this isn't always, so this is like a generalization, but there seems to be a gregarious need to those who kind of bring in like I've got all the answers.
I'm the solution.
I can fix things and I can help you and I've done this in church and I've heard this happen as well, Tom, where people come in and be like, hey, I did this in my old church and blah blah blah, and it comes across as a little bit like, are you picking on what we've got? You know, so and I've seen that create like pathways to unhealthy people being in leadership in some ways.
I think this phrase a leadership book talked about the importance of guarding the gate.
Yeah.
I think is really meaningful to me because before you put someone into a leadership position, like you have to be really thoughtful.
Yep.
And the more reach and authority that they have, the more careful you have to be.
Yeah, the big joke behind this is that you never want the guy who wants to teach the book of Revelation to teach the book of Revelation. I mean, that's just the way it goes.
Oh, man. Well, so that person produces a system, right? And the thing about systems is they can persist after that person is no longer there because it becomes a culture that outlives any particular person. And this guy, Dave Johnson and Jeff Van Vonderen.
Must be Dutch.
Yeah, definitely. You got to give it to the Dutch.
Yeah, seriously.
Have kind of identified four main characteristics of an abusive system, specifically a spiritually abusive system. So the first one is power posturing, where the leaders are preoccupied with their own authority and continually remind people of it. This runs counter to the Bible's teaching that church leaders are not to excessively leverage their authority, but are to lead by example, not decree. And so power posturing can happen overtly. Hey, I am the elder, and Hebrews tells you to submit to me, so submit to me. Or it can happen in a more subversive, manipulative way. So my question to you guys is, how does Imprint think about power and authority on the various offices of elder and deacon?
You want to take a stab at that?
I was going to let you.
How do we think about that? I think with some fear and trepidation, honestly. When I was preaching Hebrews, I said to the church on this, like, obey leaders and submit to them. I was like, it's actually, my life is harder because God's entrusted authority to me. I have like more to think about. I have a hard enough time like leading my family. Leading a church, there's some ways in which, like, I told the Lord, like, I don't want to be a lead pastor. I don't envy that. I wasn't, like, craving, you know, a mantle, or I just felt like this is what God had for me. Mm-hmm. And I think that Jesus telling his disciples who were hungry to be seated at his right hand in his kingdom.
I love, he said, you don't know what you're asking.
Yeah, yeah. Where he says, you know, that's not how it's supposed to be among you. That's what the Gentiles do. They lord it over, but you... You know, you want to be first, and you must be a servant of all. And I think the way that we want to think about leadership at Imprint, the way that we do, and the way that we are committed to thinking about leadership, is not our job is not to tell people what to do. Our job is not to run a business. Our job is to shepherd people. And I think it's easy to lose sight of that because it is an organization and there are decisions that have to be made. Yes. There are very functional things that need to happen.
Yes. It's helpful when the lights stay on.
Right, when the lights stay on and that there are budgets that are being, you know, looked over. And
and our church has grown through the years and we've had to make
the churches
systems,
functioning.
You know? Yeah.
But I think if church becomes, if we give into the temptation to make it into a business model, then people are no longer sheep to be shepherded. They are people there to grow the business and to satisfy the desires and the dreams and the goals and narcissistic wishes of the leaders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, along with the fear that you mentioned there, which I think is a great way of the way I view my role sometimes. Not in a bad fear, like a healthy fear, like a fear of God fear, you know, like. But I think the second way we do things for elders, leads, deacons, if you want to call them that, is a culture of shared power. Mm-hmm. And I truly believe this. And I think it blows people's minds sometimes when I tell them we have a really flat leadership structure around here. They're like, yeah, what does that really mean? Or what is that, you know, do I really, like, how does that work? But I think and I think you can talk to our leaders about this. I think a lot of them feel really empowered to lead and feel like it's not necessarily like there is one leader who's preoccupied with getting their agenda done and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But rather, there's a real sense of like, we want to see a flat leadership structure around here and shared leadership responsibility and shared power. Like, we want to empower Rex to lead the worship ministry at Imprint Church and get good theology stuck in people's heads. I mean, that's your we actually absorb some of the language. So this is interesting. I'm just thinking on the fly here, but we've absorbed language from leadership at our church before. Like, our top level leaders haven't created our entire language for Imprint Church. There's been some that have brought up from underneath, like things like that. Like,
yeah, or like, so there's a guy named Danny Lindquist who's in our church, and he's a volunteer. He's a volunteer lead over at Bothell now, doing the tech ministry. And we absorb some of his language. It's something that I say all the time, is that we're gonna prioritize polish over production. Mm-hmm. And that came from a volunteer. That didn't come from me. Another example that I think of, and this one kind of blows my mind. When we were talking with you guys about coming to Imprint, you and Tom met me and my wife Kinsey at the Bine in downtown Bothell. Mm-hmm. And we asked you guys some questions, and you know, we had some questions about some things, and particularly around the way that that the Lord's Supper was offered at Imprint, and like how you guys were communicating that. And so Kinsey had questions about that, and she had some things, and you guys looked at each other and said, yeah, we could probably be more clear on that. Mm-hmm. And then we looked at podcasts later on, and you guys had changed language on that based on feedback from a random job candidate's wife who did that. So, but I think that does show up at Imprint in particular.
I think even here's another example, and I don't want this to. We're not turning this into a hey, we're awesome. Just but, so you know, but I'm answering the question because I think that it is important for people to know how we seek to lead here, which I think there are some practices and some structures and a culture we're building here that will help prevent abuse in leadership. And so going with what Darren was talking about of listening to people and not thinking that we have all the answers.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I'm pretty acutely aware that I'm not wise enough to, and that's not false humility, saying that. I'm just like, Lord, thank you, Lord, for the elders. I would have gone crazy or trashed, brought the church into, I don't know, like crashed the ship if not for the elder board during the time of COVID.
Yeah.
But even this podcast, like, we enjoy doing this podcast, but we were doing it weekly, and then there were other before we did the Word of Their Testimony, which, by the way, I've heard so much feedback. That's the best thing that we've ever done.
I agree.
Let's do it again.
We have been taking our time, you know, like putting content together. Darren and I were alternating preaching, and so there was a lot more bandwidth that he and I both had while we were one church in one location. And as we started seeing the date coming for relaunching
for the relaunch,
both locations, both Darren and I were feeling like we don't have time with going back to preaching weekly to give to this podcast. And we actually made a decision with the elders that we were going to discontinue this podcast, even though it made us really sad.
Yep.
And then Rex was like, is there any way that we can like maybe do this and change the format to keep it going? And then we also heard from some people around the same time, right?
I remember we said that because I think you guys had the elder meeting, and then that Tuesday,
the elder retreat,
that Tuesday after that, we met and talked, and I said, well, it'd be great if we could keep it going in some way, but I understand. And then we got to our weekly lead huddle, which is our check-in with each other. And like three or four people were like, no, that's a bad idea. Mm-hmm. Like we should keep this going.
Mm-hmm. So. And to go back to your point, we said, okay, we should bring this back to the elders.
And so we said, is there a way to do this? And we said, well, maybe if we do it twice a month. And then Darren kind of had the idea of what if we take turns here with this crew, like coming up with a conversation to have that's less didactic, less mm-hmm. preparation. Like doing a series in church history would be really difficult to.
Yeah, totally.
That'd be great.
I think it'd be great, but there are better podcasts out there. So I'll say, can I say one more thing about this on a different topic? I think what I have observed at Imprint Church is that often. What are you eating over there, Tom?
don't worry about it, Rex.
Are they garden salsa
garden
sun
salsa
chips?
Sun chips?
I wish. I looked around, but I couldn't find any.
We call Tom. Actually, Tom self-designates himself as Snack King Cole. So.
I'm always looking for the snacks.
Anyway, I have noticed the culture of leadership at Imprint Church. I think the a way that you could describe how leadership is executed here is a culture of burden bearing more than it is a culture of power posturing. Mm. I've noticed that whether it's in setting up a ministry, like a practicum or whatever, our goal is often to enable the saints to do the work of the ministry. And that means we will bear the burden of whether that's administrative, whether that's spiritual, whatever. That's what I have noticed at Imprint Church, at least.
So shared power rather than a preoccupation with
power posturing.
Posturing and collecting it. Then you as listeners, whoever you are, can help
both of you
hold us accountable. Seriously.
Yeah.
Like, this is what we aspire to. Mm-hmm. And this is who we see Jesus as. And
now we're accountable to. I mean, we've been accountable to.
Yeah. Yeah. We have been and continue to be. So please help us. Mm-hmm. The second characteristic of a spiritually abusive system is performance preoccupation. So this is, you know, depending on your tradition, works righteousness or legalism, all sorts of different ways of talking about it. But basically, your maturity becomes a matter of performance and obedience.
Yeah. Are you showing up to church every Sunday? Are you involved in this class? Are you doing this thing?
But it's, reinforced from the culture, primarily from, you know, the leadership level. Mm-hmm. But how do we at Imprint think about obedience, about performance, about, that external visible sign of, I guess, maturity?
Well, we could go back to that conversation that we had in 2021 about gospel doctrine and gospel culture. You know, gospel doctrine is the message of God's undeserved
grace
for the undeserving, and then gospel
the experience of grace,
the shared experience of God's grace for the undeserving. And so, I think, like when we open the scripture and when we teach it, we are always pointing toward the ideal. And we're not. I don't think we should compromise on that. But I think whenever Darren and I are preaching, or who's ever preaching, we want to have this conviction that we are also preaching to ourselves. That we are never talking down at people. That I am just as in much of need of God's grace as the next person, even if I'm the person declaring the truth. You know. So I want to live an exemplary life. The Scripture calls me to an exemplary life, but it also tells me that I'm in desperate need of God's grace. And so if people are failing and people are half-hearted in their faith or maybe wishy-washy in their commitments, like I think the scripture uses this word of like exhort one another, like encourage one another. Yes, the scripture does say that the scripture is given for rebuke and for correction and for teaching and training in righteousness. But all of that's always supposed to be done in a spirit of gentleness, in the spirit of grace. That word rebuke sounds really harsh, right? It doesn't have to be a harsh thing.
I think it's been painted that way, though.
Yeah, it's been painted that way. And some people have used it that way. So how do we, you know, what if people aren't performing? Like, I don't think that I should be obsessed with people's performance. I think for a church staff that there can be a lot of dysfunction and abuse that can happen within church staffs where it's like how many people showed up or like if we, I mean, I don't know the last time that, because we meet with Stephen Mendez, our family student lead weekly. I don't remember the last time that we asked him how many students showed up, at student ministry on Sunday night.
I asked him how many were signed up for camp. That's the only thing. And I was like, oh, I just wanted to know how many were sold out.
That's because we're sold out.
I was like, man. But we don't ask that question.
But if we were always asking our staff how many people showed up at that or how many people came, what that communicates, and I've been in contexts where it's been like, oh, how many came to that retreat or how many came to this?
It's the mark.
It felt like my identity and my faithfulness in the job was wrapped up in how many people showed up. And so
that's awesome. Can I take this a different direction too? Because you know, when I read Performance Preoccupation on this one earlier, I thought of something a little different, and it starts with, do you guys remember that Instagram account, Preachers and Sneakers?
Yep.
So when I read this, first of all, I thought that's what it was. I like what Tom said too, because that is totally right. And the way I view the people are people who are shepherding. But actually, with Performance Preoccupation, I've shared some concerns, like internally, that now I'm externalizing by vocalizing them, of churches that are so focused on kind of the show, if you will, and especially pastors that, you know, I actually heard a pastor once say, which I thought was funny. But it was not funny. He's like, I spent more time thinking about what I was going to wear today than what I was going to say today, you know? And I was like, oh, no.
I was at that same conference.
Yeah.
And it was kind of funny, but it was kind of disturbing.
Yeah. We were like, you know?
Brutal.
But there's like this sense, but there was a performance kind of feeling there. And I think that happens in the context of some churches. I might even say, dare I say, churches on the east side have a little bit of that, like, you got to have the flashy, and I'm not going to call anyone, but I just know, I think we probably feel it. Like, we live in the tech area where things are amazing.
Things are put together.
Things are put together, and we've just kiboshed the show as much as possible to make it hospitable. And we've actually used the word hospitality instead of, like, the reason why we have lights on the stage is for hospitality, so that you can see the person's face. Yeah, the sneaker thing, the clothing, designer clothing, some of those things, like, that feels like an abusive environment just by looking at it from the outside. I'm not saying it always is. It just, I get red flags.
But it can trend that way. It can open the door for performance when you are concerned more with externals.
Sure. Is that what you're thinking of? I mean, maybe, call me if I'm wrong on this. I mean, there's some...
Yeah, that's a preoccupation with image, which performance is about, I think.
Yeah.
So you gain power and influence by being somebody that people look up to morally by your performance. Mm-hmm. And then also in the cool factor of that's somebody I want to follow through how they dress whatever that external thing is, rather than a focus on character.
Yeah.
I think...
And unfortunately, our culture values it, so it's like, man.
Yeah, it's one of the highest values. Yep. Our culture is trying to create, you know, 3 trillion celebrities. Mm-hmm. You know, we can all put all our deepest thoughts on the internet and gain followers and influence.
You can be an influencer.
Totally. And it's a desire to be known and to exercise some sort of influence. And so it comes from, in some ways, an innate design within us all, that desire to be known and to influence others. But then it becomes totally deformed and abusive when it enters into a system like this and when it's expressed in that way.
I think one of the ways that performance can be performance preoccupation can be perpetuated is through rewarding publicly and praising publicly performance type of things, like numbers.
Yep.
So if a church celebrates the numbers and the budget and the building and the budget and the butts, right? That's like the people. Like, sorry, that was time.
We have the 3 G's.
You know what I mean? But like if you celebrate that, then that what you celebrate is what you value. Mm-hmm. And so if you are celebrating performance, then that's what people are going to hear you doing rather than celebrating someone's character or celebrating the life transformation that you see happen. That's why my favorite part of the family meetings has been stories of gratitude. When we opened up our family meeting with just passing the microphone and people just sharing what they're grateful for, I was like, that's the kind of family meeting I want to be a part of
all day.
Yeah. And even now, as we're talking about it, each one, you can see how, like, well, power is not a bad thing. And, you know, leaders need to have some authority, and how the subtlety of the need creeps in and then becomes twisted and abused by a system.
Yeah.
Just like obedience is a good thing, but a preoccupation with what you can see rather than the character and heart of a person.
Yeah, it's a fallacy that happens in it happens in business quite a bit, where people pick metrics. They see metrics that correlate with growth, and so then they're like, well, let's just, if we focus on these metrics, then we'll grow. And that's not necessarily, it doesn't work backwards. You can't necessarily reverse engineer it. And I think it's the same thing. If we could put discipleship on a chart, it'd be really easy. Mm-hmm. It'd be cool. But it's not, that's just not the way it works.
I used to do a thing with leaders down in Portland. We'd adopted a model from a pretty cool church. And part of it was this idea of stages of spiritual growth and using the metaphor of human development. And so you've got the baby, or the dead, and the baby, and the young child, and the teenager, and coming into becoming a parent. And the thing that was always really interesting to me is that on paper, they're really nice, tidy lines.
Yeah.
But often what you'd find is an adult who never reproduces, and people think they're a parent, but it's like, no, that's not where they're at spiritually. They're probably more like a young adult or a teenager.
Yeah.
The vocabulary of an intelligent, spiritually speaking, baby in the faith who's just good at reading a lot of books, and their vocabulary outpaces their obedience and maturity.
Man, yeah.
So, let's move
along.
Let's
keep going. Yeah.
Okay, number three after performance preoccupation is unspoken rules.
Mm-hmm.
So within a spiritually abusive system, there are unspoken rules that are never talked about. But everybody knows them. We don't do that thing, or we always do that thing.
Yeah. I kind of referenced this last week, talking about, like, no pastor gets up and says, like, hey, everything, like, some might, but, like, in general, like, a lot of communities where these unspoken rules form, it's not because a pastor got up and said, hey, whatever I do is right, and it's baptized, and you have to follow me. Sometimes that culture just kind of grows, and it grows because of things left unsaid, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It grows because that is assumed, or again, it's not cleared up that, like, you know, I am fallible. I'm a fallible person, but that infallibility for some reason sort of creeps in. Why does that happen?
Well, I didn't have an answer to that question. I was going to say something else. I was going to say, we come back to Rex's question. I was going to say, of all the things that we've talked about so far, for me, this is maybe the most elusive to identify because it's unspoken. I don't know what's there. I would have probably somebody else.
A blind spot is a blind spot.
Yeah, it's
you
like
can't
a blind spot.
It.
So I would need somebody else to help me see, are there unspoken rules around here? I don't know.
I told you that, McGregor. You remember when you rolled in here and I was like, you have about 90 days, although COVID ruined everything. Yeah. But I was like, you have about 90 days before you're one of us. Like, can you take the first 90 days and tell us what's missing around here? Do you remember me saying that to you?
Oh, yeah. I wrote up a...
You wrote up a paper.
A very long paper.
A very long...
and destroyed us.
You've never been short for words.
what was Rex's question? Sorry.
Yeah.
No, my question was like, this happens, and we know it happens.
How does it happen?
How does it happen? Yeah.
I think you identified it.
Yeah. What?
Like, the things that you don't say... can create misconceptions, but then also the way you respond when somebody transgresses, especially publicly.
Yeah.
So if a leadership structure responds very publicly to a transgression of an unspoken rule, then that becomes codified in the system.
The rule.
Yep.
Yeah, it's basically we don't talk about Bruno if you think about it, because I mean the
whole still
I don't know what
that
means.
Movie.
You have it? Well, I mean, it's a family. It's more part of the member of the family they don't talk about because they kind of went off and they're not part of the family anymore.
There's a whole song we don't
There's
talk
a whole
about
song
Bruno.
That we don't talk about Bruno. And what I mean
Did
by
you
saying
sing
that
for me?
Is no.
Okay. Don't talk about Bruno.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I like it. But it means that there are things that we just don't talk about because we're a family, and because it almost feels like it upsets the equilibrium of all the things, and so therefore don't say it. You know,
let's get concrete. Okay, so have you guys ever been in a system that had unspoken rules that you ran into and didn't know about them until you ran into them?
I've been in a place where I was like warned of unspoken rules. When I like got into a place,
mm-hmm.
so it wasn't like
what
a,
were they?
I don't want to get too specific. It was
that's okay.
Yeah, it was but there were some things. It's like, hey, if you think this, that's fine, but keep it to yourself.
Mm.
Or if you believe this way, that's fine, but keep it to yourself. Because mm-hmm. when you're here, that's not what you believe publicly. Mm. It was that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Can I have one?
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
In one church context that I served in on staff, if there was no rule that said if there's an event at the church building and you're on staff, you need to be there. But there was this felt like, oh gosh, we didn't talk about this. I wasn't told to be there. Do I have to go to this? And then I felt this like,
this pull.
I should probably go because it's going to be maybe go bad for me if I don't, or maybe mm-hmm. my boss is expecting me to be there, although he's never said that. There was mm-hmm. kind of this expectation, if mm-hmm. the door's open, you better be there because we're not a large church and mm-hmm. you should be there because you're one of the pastors.
Mm. Yeah, and for a community, sometimes there's that unspoken rule that if you're really a part of this community, you show up for everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You show up on Sundays, you show up for all-day prayer, you serve every chance you get, mm-hmm. you show up for the, and there is no missing, mm-hmm. Which would be a unspoken rule about performance preoccupation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, this might be throwing myself under a bus in some way. I don't mind doing that. But I remember like an unspoken rule. I remember a conversation you and I had, Rex, once a couple of years ago, maybe 2-3 years ago, about Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of this, like maybe in a good way, that was like you, like, because we had done these Christmas Eve things, and they were always kind of like fancy production-ish things or whatever. Not really. I mean, it's imprint fancy.
It was imprint fancy.
Like, you know.
You told me when I got here, let's aim for one notch above cringe.
Yeah,
so maybe
yeah,
Christmas
right.
Eve is like it's two like or two three. Notch,
yeah. But the idea was like we did something special that night. It was something different, you know. And I remember we talked about it at one point, and you said to me, I think then afterwards, because I was like, man, it would have been nice or whatever, and I was just making some comments, and you said, do you have expectations about that? You know, and it was like a really good question, because it felt like in some ways like unspoken rules that come into churches. Like, and I felt like you were being really honest there. And actually, I did come back and say, maybe I do have some expectations.
Yeah, you did.
Like, and maybe I didn't even realize it. My joke with Rex is that he is my emotional kind of, what would you say?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm your
thermometer.
I used a funny phrase at one point. But yeah,
you like figure
the Obama translator for your emotions.
yeah, totally. Yeah, that's such a great thing. But yeah, I mean, the nice thing is like, so I suppose in some ways there are unspoken rules in every culture.
Oh yeah,
I guess
totally.
The way to fight that is a little bit is just have conversations about them, try to get around them, to kind of like say like
not be afraid to ask why.
Ask like as Tom was saying a minute ago, like ask, am I supposed to be at every event here? Like, can we kill some of those things? Or and if you can't ask those questions, that's an abusive environment.
Yeah, and like so, I've been in situations at Imprint where people have asked me, "Hey, is there a reason we do this way?" And mm-hmm. I think about it and I say, "No, there's not." Mm-hmm. And they say, "Well, we thought about doing it this way."
Like,
yeah, sure.
That's what I say.
And it can be even as simple as that. Like, if you have a question about the way things are done, ask it. And if someone responds and says, you know, we don't talk about Bruno, then that's not a good situation.
That's a great comment. And hence we started this podcast out by saying we have responsibilities for you as a listener, mm-hmm. you know, all two of you.
Yeah.
You have homework.
I think you guys, there's more than that.
There
right?
are, this podcast is like way up the charts now, I'm telling you. Like we're
but it's for our community.
It
like
is for our community.
Our community might be listening. So. All right, final one, lack of balance. And what I mean by this, or what they mean, Johnson and Van Vonderen, mean by lack of balance is that spiritually abusive churches have little or no spiritual balance. Either there's extreme objectivity, for instance, like if you don't understand the original languages mm-hmm. and the cultural background of scripture, then you cannot interpret it for yourself. Mm. Or extreme subjectivity, which would be more like...
God told me,
and I think that we need to do this thing.
Yeah.
And remember, all four of these things are like working with each other.
Yep,
so power posturing of God told me, and since I'm the spiritual authority, that's what we're going to do.
Unspoken rule, don't challenge this. Yeah.
And then also black and white thinking. so like... just the idea that either something is good or bad. And if it's good, then they would never do anything bad. And if they're bad, then they could never do anything good. There's no such thing as common grace. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's enemies of the church, and our church is good, obviously, because we're the good guys. And so that extreme black and white thinking, no room for ambiguity or the grays.
Things are just kind of set in absolutes.
Where are the ambiguities for Imprint?
I think there was a lot of ambiguity when we were going through COVID and all the regulations.
I would say
go ahead. I was going to say, I don't think any of us were claiming to have a divine word from God on how things were supposed to go.
Yeah.
So I think that's a helpful reminder. I'm not infallible.
Mm-hmm. I think we've also, sorry, Rex.
No, you go. Go ahead.
I think we've also been willing to, from the pulpit, say, I don't know. And we've done that a few times. At least I have. Maybe Tom's never done that. No, you have. I'm sure you have.
I like speaking absolutes from the pulpit.
We've also been charitable with other interpretations. And we've tried to be charitable. We don't. And we know we actually know the other interpretations. We've actually sometimes talked about the other interpretations. And we don't want to preach in options. We talk about that sometimes as well. Preaching is not necessarily, here's three options for this passage. You know, you get to decide.
Yeah. That's the extreme subjectivity.
That's the extreme subjectivity. But we also go, we've worked hard enough to respect church history and theology and backgrounds and different denominations to say, I'm not going to speak in such sweeping broad statements as if my way and my sliver of evangelicalism is the way, and there's no one else that can do that. So we've worked in subjectivity a little bit that way. And I feel like a lot of the abusive cultures out there have really taken they've
absolutized
gone
their
hard
position
into those things. It's like, you know, it's even in politics you see it. I mean, you can be a extremist left or right, right? And you're just caught in that, and everything else is evil. You know, it's like fundamentalism works both
ways. If your church didn't operate this way during COVID, then they're bad.
The bad.
They're
ones.
Liberal enemy, or they're whatever. They're far right, far left, whatever you want
whatever
to say.
Whatever it might be.
And that's somewhat abusive, honestly.
That's sort of what I was going to say, Darren, is I feel like not in COVID time. I would say it happened in COVID time, but even in ordinary time, to use a liturgical word, I feel like Imprint operates in a healthy ambiguity. I think that there are things that we hold on to in a closed-handed way because we see those things in Scripture spelled out as black and white. You know, we're calling the black things black, the white things white.
Yep.
But I don't think that we have done that with secondary and tertiary issues. I think we allow other voices to speak. I feel like we talk about the umbrella of small O orthodoxy in a good way, not in a pluralistic way, not in a syncretistic way, but not in a way that denies truth or the gospel or whatever, because we all have opinions. But I also think that we hold on to those things charitably, and I think that has that's been good. I think that has been that's been challenging for some people that I know at Imprint, where it's like they wish we would come down harder on something or this other thing. But for me, I would say I have seen a, and again I'm on the inside here, but I've seen a restraint and a balance when it comes to dealing with issues that are not as straightforward as some people make them out to be.
That's great. That's a great
And how do you treat people then? That's an important leadership question when we consider
how do you treat people
how do you treat people who arrive
who
at a different
with
conclusion
you?
Than you? Do you make them feel like they are lesser, you know, or are you willing to say, hey, it's okay that you believe, I see that differently, but it's okay that you believe that.
Yeah. So those are the four that are part of a system that lends itself to spiritual abuse: power posturing, performance preoccupation, unspoken rules, and a lack of balance, extreme objectivity or extreme subjectivity.
Super helpful.
Do you guys want to go into a little bit more on some of the contributing factors, or do you want to turn the corner on mitigating factors?
Yeah, I think we keep moving. There's some good stuff. I mean, this is like, I'm looking at kind of some of our notes here, and there's so much we could talk about with this, and you'd be welcome to reach out to us and talk about these
things. Yeah, happy to.
We used to say in this podcast, if you have any questions, you can email us at podcast@imprintchurch.org. But yeah, I mean, we could do more with that, but maybe we should talk about how to mitigate abuse in the church, you know, and what to do there.
Yeah. So, there's a website that I found super helpful, called Not in Our Church. And a lot of these come from that or from a guy named Deepak Reju, R-E-J-U. He, wrote that book On Guard. And then, there were, a Michael Dye book called, The Church Helping or Hurting. Mm. There's a few other resources, again. So these are coming from various sources. But one of the first things that everybody says is talk about it, mm-hmm. Which this is our attempt. And we've been doing this for a couple of years now. When the SBC scandal came into the light, we talked about then. I imagine that as things have come out over the years.
The Phineas and Hopney sermon.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, you guys have been talking about it longer than I've been around Imprint. But it's talking about it, that we accept that. You know, this stuff is happening, and that it could happen here. That's mm-hmm. one of the first things. The second thing is understanding that church safety and church health is everyone's responsibility, not mm-hmm. just the leadership. Mm-hmm. So maybe it'd be helpful to talk about that.
Can
for
we
a
talk
little
about
bit.
That for a second? Yeah, because I have a presupposition, and that is that. Institutional health is secondary to
yep.
human health. Like, and I need to unpack that a little bit.
What do you mean, the health, individual health of the leaders?
No, I mean, I think what some people want to do so is much
protect
is
the institution.
Protect the institution. Mm. You know, like, I'm not saying this super well, but like the idea is that you actually do everything you can to keep the name out of the papers. You do everything you can to make sure that we're not slandering the Church of Jesus, or let's just be honest, the church of whatever name's on the sign, right?
Like,
and I think one of the things that it bothers me so much that we try so hard. It's like churches sometimes run to lawyers first to figure out how they pull themselves out of like a real human situation or something like that. And I just feel like that's...
You feel like it's saving the name of the church more so?
Yeah, than the humans involved, or than the health, the actual literal spiritual health mm-hmm. of the people in the church.
I mean, an example is, and we don't have to talk about it a whole lot, an example is the SBC thing, mm-hmm. where a lot of people were...
For those who aren't familiar with that, can you summarize that?
So basically, there was a cover-up of sexual abuse in the Southern Baptist Convention, and there was a report that came out that's kind of... It was a big investigation, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of documents and witnesses and
outside
it was
done,
it was completely
well
done from the outside. It was well done, well documented, all that. And one thing that was a constant refrain is like, oh, but like, you know, it's what you talked about earlier, McGregor. It's like, oh, but this person does so much good. Mm-hmm. Think of what you would do. Mm-hmm. Think of how much good you would prevent from being done by reporting what's happening. Mm-hmm. That was a bell that was rung a lot. Like, oh, this is going to do damage to the perception of the convention.
Well, especially
if this comes out,
and especially missionary work.
Missionary
that
work,
thing.
That kind
like
of thing.
We put so much money into missionary work, which is
it's
they
true.
Do.
It's true.
The SBC puts massive.
So let's cover
dollars.
Up sexual abuse for the sake of the gospel.
So
how messed up is
I know,
that?
It's messed
so
up, messed but up. That's to put like a practical thing behind it. That's what mm-hmm. they're talking about. Where it's a don't. If this gets out, think of all the good that we won't be able to do because it's going to defame the name of the institution.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what he's talking about.
Yeah. The one of the kind of scandals that I came across was down in Oregon. I was classmates with some people that were involved in it, and quite close. And the church did everything possible, not just to protect the person, but to protect the institution. And one of the refrains was not just, you know, this person's amazing or we'll drag the church's name through the mud, but like this will reflect poorly on Jesus. Mm. And there were, you know, two professors that were involved in that cohort that had just a ton of experience walking through this kind of stuff over the last, you know, 40, 50 years. And one of them was great when he responded. He said, Jesus has weathered the Inquisition and the Crusades.
Yeah.
Anti-Semitism mm-hmm. and the Weimar Republic. Mm-hmm. The gates of hell will not stand against the kingdom of God.
Yeah.
You know? And so you do more damage to his name when you continue to represent him as somebody that is hiding something that he would just be,
yes,
is grieved over. And the other thing, the other guy said, he's a guy up in Alaska, and he works with a lot of big churches that kind of need help. And one of the things that he said was, a lot of times, people that are involved in big churches, this is their only way out of ministry. They've gotten themselves into a position,
yep.
and they have to crash the ship in mm-hmm. order to bail out,
no, because leave.
The people around them won't mm-hmm. let them mm-hmm. leave. And by protecting them, you're actually keeping them in a situation mm-hmm. they've attempted to get out mm-hmm. of. Mm-hmm. Have you guys been following the change in the law that would close the loophole? So there's a loophole for clergy for some states, not all states.
Yeah, it gives us the ability to not say anything about sexual abuse or anything like that.
Yeah, you know, we're not mandatory.
We're not mandatory reporters right now, currently. So
Which I've always thought of myself as a mandatory reporter.
Absolutely.
And acted as such. And I think
we've told our team likewise, by the way, even though we're not legally mandatory reporters, you are, if you're part of our imprint team, a mandatory reporter.
Yep.
So, yep.
Yeah. And I'd say likewise for the imprint community.
Yeah.
If you've heard of abuse, especially something that like is illegal, mm-hmm. Just obviously so, child abuse or otherwise, call the authorities. Mm-hmm. Like we can sort things out on the back end.
Yeah.
Yeah. We want to be less concerned with the institution than we do with the things that would be most concerning to Jesus in your, you know, like, by all means.
Yeah. Some of the other things that these resources have advocated that help a community stay safe are good theology, which, you know, in an abusive system, good theology can be misused. But I think of a few things. Mm. One, grace is key. So understanding what grace is and isn't, not being cheap grace. Mm-hmm.
But some people think grace is excusing sin or overlooking and considering it mm-hmm. not worthy of mentioning or confronting. Yep. That's not actually grace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Justice, that God is a God of justice and cares about it, especially for the vulnerable. Mutual submission,
That's good.
That a community submits to one another. Mm-hmm. I don't know, we haven't been explicit about that, but even when Darren, Tom, and Rex were talking about the way that the offices function, there is a mutual submission among offices in a way that doesn't change an authority structure that God has instituted, but is relational in nature and that extends to the community. So I was just going to ask, like, what are some of the components of theology that help mitigate an abusive community or space?
That's a very broad question, and I don't know that I have, like, I don't know how to say this in a way that could be systematically or formulaically practiced, other than to say when you get your face in the Bible and you humble your heart before God— in the Bible, like that has to be the thing that shapes you. Because if I'm not shaped by that, then I will try to protect my job. I'll try to protect the institution. I don't want to drag everyone through the mud. Like, no, like if we are before God and humble before Him and really seek the heart of God for people, then that's the thing that I think is going to keep me from being abusing the power and authority that God has entrusted to me. Because I will say, what right? I'm only here by grace. Mm-hmm. I'm only here by grace. And God has called me to care for His people. Hebrews 13 says I'm going to have to give an account for that. Mm-hmm. That's pretty sobering. You know, that I don't... It's when we lose sight of who God is and we grow bigger in our own minds. We grow egos. We grow a sense of self-importance that's overinflated. Like, that's what leads to abuse. And I think when you consider Jesus as Lord and He lowered Himself, I know it sounds cliche to say go back to the gospel, but that's what you do. You go back to who Jesus is, and like, He lays down His life. And if that's His attitude, then any exercise of my authority that is hurtful to people in an abusive way. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, people can be hurt by leadership if they're making a good decision, right? And they don't like your decision, they can mm-hmm. feel hurt by it. I'm talking about to make an abusive decision mm-hmm. is a complete contradiction of the character of Christ and a rejection, repudiation of my calling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great.
So you can't put that in like a little easy to, you know, like
that's
a
what
bow,
I was hoping
right?
you were going to say, actually. You know? I was hoping you were going to talk about Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think if we have a clear view of who He is, and a real clear view of what the cross is all about, that this is the way He chooses to exercise power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, think of the self-designation of Jesus, gentle and lowly. You think of the designations in Scripture, the lion and the lamb. I mean, you think mm-hmm. of these images of who Jesus is, and there's a beautiful picture of both confident leadership, strong leadership, as well as humility. One who yeah. will share power,
yeah.
by the way.
Gives it away.
So that's the craziest thing about yeah. Jesus. I mean, well, from the garden. I mean, this was like he created humanity to be vice regents. I guess we call them mm-hmm. vice regents yeah. in the world. Like you're ruling.
Work with Him.
You're yeah. ruling with Him. And then what happens in Revelation?
Yeah. Step up on the throne, man.
We're ruling with Him. Like, yeah. how ridiculous is that? Like, what kind of God shares leadership in that way? You know, that yeah. makes no sense.
Talk about somebody that could legitimately say, I can do it better than you.
Yeah. yeah, totally.
yeah. yeah. Oh, man. And have.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that you can share this with me.
Pretty amazing.
I think we should take it on home.
That's good. Yeah.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jesus is a great way to end with this. Is there anything else that we would want to say, guys, that you want to say to people who are a part of Imprint Church, who are listening here? Any other pleas that you want to make regarding what we've talked about?
I might say that I understand that there are people who are coming to Imprint from church backgrounds where there's been hurt and there's mistrust. And I guess I would say hopefully over time we can earn your trust. It's kind of like when Paul says in 1 Corinthians, he's like, I don't know of anything against me, but that doesn't clear me. Like, God's the one who's going to be my judge. I don't know of anything in my conscience that testifies against me or us or in how we're operating, but I could have blind spots. We could have blind spots. And
yeah,
by God's grace, so I'll be open to listen to those. But yeah. I want people to know, like, our heart is to lead well. And the reason we're having this conversation is because we don't want to be a church that's spiritually abusive, but I think we need to have even having this conversation, I think, is reflective of our conviction of the doctrine of sin and depravity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because if we think that we're above all this, it's kind of like,
yeah, I know.
With me in marriage, I'm like, I'll say I'm afraid of committing adultery. I don't have any plans. I've never made any plans. No. I've never moved toward that in any way, but I feel like I should have a healthy fear of that because there are good men that I know of that have committed adultery, and it's possible. And the doctrine of sin says it's possible for them. Mm-hmm. It's possible for me. It says it's possible for us to have a slow creep of spiritual unhealth in our leadership and in our church, and we want to remain vigilant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I would not only echo those words, but let you guys know that there is there's a collaborative work environment around here where what I feel like is kind of cool is that I don't think Tom Regan could get away with much without me noticing. I don't think I could get away with much without him noticing and someone mentioning, or whoever. I could look around to Rex and Tom as well and say the same thing, because we're involved in each other's lives. And this is the gift of Imprint Church. Like, in the early days, it wasn't like this, but now there's such a really cool shared leadership that it feels like that there's some accountability structure built in there. We're asked that sometimes around, like when we go to Introducing Imprint and someone says, what's your accountability? Are you part of denomination or whatever it is? And I think back and I go, you know, not, no, we're not. But what we do have here is something really special where we don't insulate ourselves from one another. Like, I think you guys know me pretty well. I know you pretty well. You kind of know what I'm doing throughout the week. You know, I mean, there's just pieces of that, which is a good thing. And so I would say, like, if you're worried about the context of leadership in this church, yeah. Like there's some built-in structures of shared leadership here that actually give us permission to speak into each other's life, all that kind of stuff. And so I would hope that you guys would know that we're trying to create a healthy environment mm-hmm. based on some, even some very practical things such as that. And so, yeah, I mean, we're not perfect in any way, shape, or form, mm-hmm. and we would welcome blind spot conversations. Yeah. I think we would want you to say, like, hey, this felt like this to me when you said this to me. And I want to hear that. It's like when, yeah. going back to the marriage illustration, you know, like, I would hope that if my wife would say to me, hey, I felt bad when you said that, I would be like, well, I didn't mean that, so you shouldn't feel that way. You know, like, yeah. like what a moron. Yeah. Like, yeah, yeah. I would rather say, okay, let's talk about that. Let's figure out how, like, I wasn't trying to be abusive. I was trying to figure, you know, and so I would hope that you'd be willing to take those risks yeah. with us and kind of walk through that. And I know for those of you who experienced trauma, it's going to take time. And it's going to take a long time to get that trust and get to that point. But, I'm grateful for what we have here, and by God's grace, I would pray and ask the Lord to keep us from any kind of spiritual abuse or any kind of abuse in the mm-hmm. future.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say I would love for there to be an unwritten rule at Imprint Church that is no question is off limits.
Yeah, those are wrong. Oh wait, yeah,
you know what I mean. I would love my plea and the bell I want to ring for you guys who are listening is that no question is off limits. Mm-hmm. You can ask the leadership anything. You can ask us anything. We want a culture of transparency here. We want to do everything possible to make this a difficult place, or a hard place, or an impossible place for abuse to happen. We know we can't control everything to a T, but we want to be as open as possible. And I say that not having asked Darren or Tom if we should say that, or the elder board if we should say that, because I know they agree. Mm-hmm. No question is off limits. If something's going on that is fishy, or if you have questions about something, we want to know. We want to know about it. We want to talk about it. We want to answer questions. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like Tom said, we would be foolish. And I speak of not just we as leadership, but we as the community would be foolish to think that it couldn't happen here. And we need one another. So not just say something about leadership,
yeah. Yeah.
but also... And not just ask questions, but also be constructive in creating the kind of culture that is healthy, focused on Jesus, and like bathed in love for one another and for our neighbors, and reflects the heart of Jesus for the world. That culture doesn't happen just because you have, you know, a good elder board or yeah. a good deacon yeah. team, or you know, whatever. It happens because a whole community is pursuing Jesus together, so we need to do that in this area too.
Great. Well, guys, if you have any questions about anything that has said, anything that was not said, please reach out. All of our email addresses are on the website. You can send an email to podcast@imprintchurch.org. We'll make sure it gets to the right spot. Imprint Church, we know that we love you, know that we're thinking about these things. Know that we want this to be a place of safety and a place where we can make grateful and generous disciples through the gospel of Jesus Christ. We will see you in a little bit with something else.
Thanks for listening. For more information and resources from Imprint Church, you can download our app or head to imprintchurch.org.